Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Joining me this week as co-host is Billboard Magazine senior editor Stephen Horowitz. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Keith.
How are you?
I'm very happy to be here.
Stephen is stepping in this week for the absent Katie Atkinson, as the fabulous Katie is on maternity leave for the next few months. I look forward to getting all sorts of news about the hottest lullabies when Katie returns later this year. You are missed, Katie, but hopefully you're not listening to this because you're probably busy with a baby right now. Well, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we'll be previewing this weekend's big Hot 100 Festival happening at Jones Beach Theater in New York. Well, technically Long Island. Everyone from Demi Lovato and Major Lazer to Camila Cabello and Zedd will be playing the show, and we'll be talking all about what to expect and more. And as part of our preview, we've got an interview with one of the festival's performers, Bea Miller. Bea dropped by the office a few weeks ago to chat about playing the show, how Jones Beach actually has been part of her family life for years, and her mom is super stoked to go see Bea play Jones Beach. You'll hear all about that later. And of course, all the new music that Bea has been releasing this year. There's a super interesting story behind the EPs she's been releasing, so stay tuned for that. Plus, we've got chart news about how Kendrick Lamar returns to number one on the Billboard 200 chart with Damn, how Cardi B hits the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 with Bodak Yellow, Money Moves, how Despacito is still, yes, still number one on the Hot 100 for a 14th week, and how Kesha is on track for her second number one on the Billboard 200 with Rainbow. But first, yes, I'm still talking. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/billboardpodcasts.
You sound exhausted.
Normally, Katie and I split that up at the top of the show, but I felt awkward giving you more stuff to do since
you're
pitching in to
help. That is fine.
So I'm going to keep talking now.
Okay.
Let's run the Billboard chart numbers and do the chart chat. Here are three of the biggest headlines on the charts this week. Number one, Kendrick Lamar is back at number one on the Billboard 200 chart with Damn. Number two, Cardi B's Bodak Yellow, Money Moves, hits the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. And number three, Kesha is aiming for her second number one on the Billboard 200 chart next week with her new album, Rainbow. Okay, let's break down each of these individually. First up, Kendrick Lamar's Damn is back at number one for a fourth non-consecutive week as the album returns to the top of the list. The set earned 47,000 equivalent album units in the week ending August 10th, according to Nielsen Music.
Hasn't it been a minute since Damn was number one, Keith?
It has, indeed. The album spent 13 weeks away from number one. It started at number one in May, on May 6th, and then it spent its next 2 weeks at the top. So its first 3 weeks were all at number one. Then it stepped away from number one for just 13 weeks, which is actually the longest gap between weeks at number one in more than 4 years. The last album to spend a longer amount of time away from number one was Mumford & Sons' Babel. I always love getting that right. I always feel so good when I can pronounce it Babel. It was it spent 17 weeks away from number one. It actually returned to number one in the early part of 2013 after it won the Album of the Year award, the Grammy Awards. So it debuted at the end of 2012, and then it spent 17 weeks away, and then it came back for another pair of weeks after its Grammy win. By the way, I didn't mention this. At number two on the Billboard 200, Brett Eldredge debuts at number two with 45,000 units for his new self-titled album. Folks thought that maybe Brett was going to be able to beat Kendrick. Didn't quite happen. And so we've still yet to have a country album be number one this year on the Billboard 200, which is kind of crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Lots of number two country albums, but not a number one yet.
Always a number two.
Darn it. Okay, next up, rapper Cardi B hits the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 with Bodak Yellow, Money Moves. I just love saying Bodak Yellow. The song, which is Cardi B's first chart hit, vaults from number 14 to number 8 in only its sixth week on the list. Hot 100's chart manager, Gary Trust, also my equivalent, he's also the other co-director of charts, notes in his story online about the new top 10. He says, Cardi B is the first female rapper to reach the top 10 with a debut entry on the chart since Iggy Azalea's Fancy, featuring Charlie XCX, reigned for 7 weeks at number one. In 2014, sorry. Back in year one. Yellow is additionally the first top 10, the first rap top 10 by a female rapper, unaccompanied by another artist, there's a lot of caveats there, since Nicki Minaj's Anaconda, this is Gary's words, slithered to number two in 2014. Because oftentimes there will be a rapper that features someone, or there's someone that's featuring Nicki Minaj, but it's kind of rare that you have a female rapper without anyone else helping her go top 10. All the more impressive. It's like this Cardi B's first hit, which is kind of crazy. And the thing keeps accelerating each week. Like, it keeps gaining in huge numbers.
It's crazy. Good for her.
Are you a big fan of the track, by the way?
I love the track.
She's a character.
She is so much personality, and I think that's kind of what helps sell it, too.
Yeah.
Because the person that she is when she's not rapping makes her seem even more legit when she is, if that makes sense. She is very well-rounded as a personality. I don't know. I think everybody buys into it. It's really great. It's nice to see more ladies in the top 10.
Ladies first.
Shout outs to Queen L.
Yeah, there you go. Up at number one on the Hot 100, Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee's Despacito featuring Justin Bieber is still number one for a 14th week. It's now tied for the second longest run at number one.
Wait, remind me, who's the longest run at number one?
That would be, thank you for asking me, Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men's One Sweet Day with 16 weeks at number one. Interestingly, Justin is releasing a new single later this week called Friends. So, like, could Justin actually challenge himself for number one? Seems weird. Like, why would you release a single now when you're about to possibly have the longest running number one ever?
It seems strange. Who knows? But it's confusing that he would try to, you know, stop his own success elsewhere on the chart.
Well, as we're recording this, it's a Monday, and Justin tweeted that it's coming out on noon on Thursday.
On Thursday, okay.
That's not, you're putting your song out on the last day of the current charting week.
Right.
When you should wait until Friday to maximize your chart potential. So part of me thinks, well, if you're actually properly releasing this on Thursday, then you know that you're going to thwart your own chances for number one because you don't want to block yourself from number one.
Well, who knows what Mariah Carey has on Justin Bieber?
Stories from their Christmas collaboration?
Hey, never forget.
Okay, well, lastly, Kesha is on her way to number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart with her latest release, Rainbow. Industry forecasters suggest the set, which was released last Friday, could earn between 100,000 and 120,000 equivalent album units in the week ending August 17th. Kesha was last number one way back in January 2010 with her debut album, Animal. Okay, let's shift gears and talk about the Hot 100 Festival.
Yes.
Steven, since you've actually been to this show, I've never been, tell us a little bit about the big shoe.
The third annual Billboard Hot 100 Festival will take place this weekend, August 19th and 20th, at the grounds at Jones Beach Theater in Long Island, New York. The fest features headliners Big Sean, Zedd, Demi Lovato, Gucci Mane, Major Lazer, Marshmello, Camila Cabello, and DJ Khaled. Ticket information is available at www.hot100fest.com.
So now let's talk about this actual show, since I've never been. I'm assuming, and I know it's an outdoor amphitheater, so it's like you're out in the wilds of Long Island on, like, is it an island that you're literally on? Like, is it sort of a peninsula? Because I feel like we have boats and stuff outside.
I don't want to disrespect any of the fine people of Long Island by, you know, misnaming what it actually is, but it is definitely surrounded by a body of water. The main stage, which I think is the, I want to say it's the Hot 100 stage, yes. It's, you know, behind it is a big body of water, so it is definitely surrounded in some sense.
Is it, like, surrounded by, like, a marsh or something? Or
I
like...
believe it's the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
Okay. So, but anyways, to talk about the festival itself.
Yeah.
There are three stages. At least I went in 2015 to the inaugural Hot 100 Festival. It was headlined by The Weeknd and Nicki Minaj and Axel Ingrosso, Lil Wayne. The list really goes on.
That's a pretty
Skrillex.
Sexy lineup, actually.
It is. Yeah. Justin Bieber played too, and, you know, a bunch of good friends of Billboard were there. And it was really a blast. It was a two-day festival, and you could basically see anything that you wanted from the charts. They, you know, I think the festival did a really great job of making it so that people can get from one stage to the other really easily, and it wasn't oversold, so you're not bumping into people every chance you get, and
right.
everything ran very smoothly, so there was no, you know, holdover from one act to the other, and it was just basically hit after hit after hit, and it was a great time.
It was kind of is it kind of like comparable to like a radio show, like kind of like a
yeah,
like
if, a jingle if ball to a jingle ball or an iHeart festival type
right.
thing.
It's kind of the same
it's
idea.
Very relative, but it feels more like a festival if you've been to a, you know, a Lollapalooza or a Coachella. It's
somewhere
very easy to bounce around,
yeah.
but you know, it's very streamlined and put together well. So, and I'm not just saying that because we're employees of Billboard, but I had a
sure
very great
are.
Time.
Sure. We are.
I had a great time, and I would really recommend going to anyone who is really interested on the East Coast or anyone who even feels that they have to make it to the East Coast this weekend.
Who are we most looking forward to seeing? Possibly Camila, because there's always the possibility of some new music that we haven't heard yet
yes.
from her upcoming album. Demi Lovato, which, I don't know, has she been like performing a lot lately? Or
To my knowledge, no.
So.
She put out Sorry Not Sorry, and I think she did a private show out here in L.A., and she may have done a few other things here and there. The Lovatics are probably going to check me on that. But
feel free, tell us.
Exactly. But I know she's been in the studio, and I know that she's working on things, so there's a probability, or I don't want to go that far, maybe a possibility that she'll be playing music.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Who knows?
Who knows?
There's also a lot more acts playing this weekend, in addition to the ones I named earlier, including Tinashe, Rick Ross, Echo Smith, Lil Yachty, and, of course, B. Miller.
Speaking of B. Miller, what a segue. Hey, it's time for our chat with the pop singer-songwriter. She came by the office a few weeks ago to chat with Katie and myself. You'll hear Katie. She's back, sort of, about her performance at the Hot 100 Festival and why her mom is especially eager to see the show. Turns out Jones Beach is a place that Bea and her family have been to quite a few times, and she talks about it in the interview. It's really cute. In addition, Bea talks about her series of color-themed EPs that she's released this year. Turns out Bea sees music in color. So there's been
synesthesia.
Yes! You actually knew that.
Of course. Pharrell has that.
Steven was not prompted with that. He knew that.
I know what synesthesia is, yes.
It's incredible, and she themed her EPs with colors, the primary colors, and it's all leading up to a new, like a full-length album that'll have some additional tracks. She'll tell you all about it here in a second when you listen. So anyways, here's our interview with Bea Miller.
When you treat me like that, when you treat me like that, it's pushing me harder, it's pushing me harder, when you're breaking my...
Hello to Bea Miller, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast.
Thank you.
Yay. First off, we want to officially welcome you to the Billboard family because you're playing our 2017 Hot 100 Festival.
Yes.
And you obviously still have plenty of time because it's in August, but have you started thinking about, like, you know, what you're planning for this performance yet?
I don't usually plan any performance in advance. I really like to just kind of feel whatever is happening in the moment and kind of react off of whatever is going on there. Obviously, like, I plan out, like, my set list and things like that.
You know what song you're
going to
do, probably.
I plan out my set. Obviously, my band needs to know that information, but in terms of in terms of what I do and just kind of the things that I say in between each song and how I react when I'm singing, it just kind of varies every time.
Yeah.
But that's how I like it.
And, you know, Hot 100 Fest is at Jones Beach, and we were chatting before we started recording. Your family has a personal connection there.
Yes, my mom was very excited about this show because I live here in L.A. now, but my family still lives on the East Coast, and my mom is from Long Island. And she told me that she's very excited about this show because she grew up going to see a lot of shows at this particular venue. And I think that's going to be cool for her to see me there.
Have you ever played there before?
No, I have not. It's this big venue on the wall. It's like this crazy. It's, yeah, it's too big for little old me by myself.
Obviously, it's not. You're booked there now. Well, that's awesome. It's very full circle. I love it.
Let's hope that mom is definitely there.
Yeah, mom's going, right?
Mom has been planning to be there for a very long time. She's, yeah.
Is she going to get you, like, a shore house and, like, have the whole family stays there?
No, but my aunt lives close by. My aunt only lives, like, 30 minutes away. I go to Jones Beach every year for the fireworks for 4th of July.
Awesome.
I was just there. We literally, like, just passed that venue a few weeks ago.
We usually, I think, in the past, we usually have fireworks at the end of the night.
Yep.
Like, usually, I think, like, one of the days is, like, Marshmallow, and the next day is what, Major Lazer or something?
There's a mess of people on
and like
this
usually
lineup.
There's some EDM act that closes out the night, and then there's like a boatload of fireworks that go off.
Yeah. I love fireworks.
Me too.
I say that now and I could be lying.
My
could be
childhood
nothing.
Love for like fireworks and like just thinking that they're magical, that will never go away.
No,
I
totally
never not
agree.
Think fireworks are magic.
I agree with you 100%.
Yep.
And I am much more grown up than you.
Yeah.
So you have this to look forward to in 15
you
years.
You will never lose that magic.
So you've done a few festivals in the past. They're interesting stages to get on because not everybody knows you. Some people are there for you. Some people are there for other acts. What do you do when you're up there to just kind of like win over people who might not know you?
Oh, that's really, I don't know that I do this on purpose, but most of the time when I'm in front of a crowd of people that don't really necessarily all know me or really seem interested, because it's very weird when you're on a stage looking at people and like I don't know if they realize that you can see them,
right?
Because it's like, oh, they're probably thinking like, oh, I'm one in a group of however many people are
right.
here. There's no way that this artist on stage can see me, but like you can see everyone.
Yeah,
and
there's not a two-way
when there
mirror.
Are people that don't know you, so they're not singing, they're just kind of standing and they have like a very straight face on. They're not doing it on purpose, because I probably do the same things when I see somebody that I've never seen before. But
it's
like,
it's called resting bitch face.
It's yes, yeah. And it's very stressful. And you're like, oh. And so usually whenever I see that, I will make a joke about it just to try to lighten the mood. I'll be like, hey guys, I know you don't know me, and this is probably really boring for you. But at least you could try to have a good time. Like, I'm just trying to, like, hang out with you guys right now, you know?
Throw me and a smile not, or something.
Yeah, like, I usually try to, like, get, like, a nice little, like, hey, I know this is probably awkward in there, but here I am. Here's my music. And you're not going to get rid of me early, so you might as well enjoy it, you know?
We interviewed Tinashe about that, sort of, like, the same thing, because she opened for, like,
Maroon 5.
Maroon 5.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, so your music is very different from Maroon 5.
That's what I was going to say. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I was like, was it hard? She's like, it was a very interesting crowd who really didn't know my music.
Yeah.
But you have to just like, you work a little harder, you try to have a good time, and like, hopefully you found some new fans in the process. And like, that's the best you can hope for in this situation, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like people go to festivals for music discovery too.
Yeah.
Like, not just to see the people that they know at the top of the bill every time, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you've given your fans a ton of new music this year, because you've had your EPs coming out, Chapter 1 Red and Chapter 2 Blue, Chapter 3 Yellow's on the way. Oh, did I do it the
chapter
other way?
Chapter 1 Blue, Chapter 2 Red. You were close, though. It's a lot to keep track of.
My colors are not a strong point, clearly. what kind of feedback have you been getting from your fans for all this new music?
Well, I don't know if anybody ever has fans that come up to them and say, your music sucks, I hate you, don't ever release anything again, because
no,
then they're probably
positive.
Not your fan.
It's all been positive.
But it's all been pretty positive. I think that people are liking the fact that I you know, I feel like every time they get bored of the three songs, like, all right, like, we've listened to these for a long enough time, then boom, I hit them with three more. So I feel like they actually really enjoy that.
That's, like, a good way of doing it, though.
Yeah.
Because like, I know at first they were kind of annoyed, like, ah, oh, we don't get 12 songs at once. That sucks. Like, we've been waiting so long for new music, and now you're only going to give us three songs in February? That sucks. But now I think they really like it, because every time they get bored of whatever I put out more stuff.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to the new music, there's also been a ton of new music videos.
Yes.
You've had, like, a bunch come out just in the past month, even. Warmer, Buy Me Diamonds, like that. How does the process work for these music videos? Is that, like, are you thinking visually when you're working on music, like, about what would look good in a video? Or is it just down the line, you're working with the director, talking about story? Like, how does that work?
Usually I come up with the concepts of the videos. And these, I would say that the Chapter 1 videos are less loosely based around my life, and then the Chapter 2 videos are a little bit looser, just because there are people that I sing about sometimes, and I don't necessarily want them to know that I'm singing about them. Because so no one ever really considers that. Like, when artists come and release music about people, like, obviously the whole world can experience them, but it's weird when, like, people in your personal life actually know what
you're
the,
like,
songs are about. And, like, they're like, hold on. So I'm always like, how do I avoid making this, like, a thing that I don't want it to be with people that I personally interact with on a daily basis?
Right.
You know, I basically just come up with concepts that reflect what the music is actually about, because music is really powerful because people can interpret it to be whatever they need it to be.
Yeah,
I think that's really amazing, and I love that. I think that's one of the, that's like why music is so important, because people can take what somebody else says and insert it into their own life in the way that they need it to. So that's great, but I also wanted to say, as much as you have your own variation and your own version of what this song is about, I'm going to show you what it actually is about when I wrote it. And so whenever I come up with concepts, I, you know, I structure them all, and I'm like, well, here's, you know, kind of what I want to touch on in each video. And I give kind of a loose outline, and I say, like, this is what I want to happen in this. I want, like, this detail and this detail, but other than that, it's pretty open, because obviously directors are really creative people.
Sure.
And I don't want to go to people who are really creative with very specific instructions.
You can't go outside of this box.
Yeah, right, because that's not great for them, and it's not great to, like, it's not a collaboration in that sense. And obviously I only want to work with directors who I really, you know, I think their work is great, and so I want their feedback on it. So usually, right, I'll give, like, a loose outline, then, you know, the colors and locations and some of the, like, smaller details are from the directors, and kind of coming together with them and figuring out what we're going to do to make them as good as they can be.
It sounds like, do you write all your music, or
yes,
do you co-write a lot of it?
I do.
I mean, that seems sort of in the same way, where it's like, you know, if you're writing something that's coming from a personal place, but you're collaborating with another writer to kind of flesh out the whole song, like, you don't want them to be like, yeah, that's great, but we really want to change this. You're like, okay, how about we work on this together, because this is a personal moment for me. I trust you, and, like, I want,
right,
your ideas, but you want it to be a collaboration, not like, all right, so that's cool, but turns out I don't want you to actually sing that. Like, you're going to sing
right,
this different lyric. You're like,
I've actually stopped working with certain people, because that actually has happened before, where you go into studio and either a producer or a writer or something. This is very rare.
Right.
Like, this is not me, like, saying all writers suck, because most writers I know are awesome.
Right.
But sometimes they walk in and you'll be like, the people will be like, well, what do you want to write about today? And if I'm in a room, most of the time we're writing for my project. And so, like, people will ask me, like, well, what are you feeling? What do you want to write about for your project,
yeah,
today? And so I'll tell them. Sometimes I've had, in very rare instances, people tell me, oh, that's great, but how about we write about this instead? And that is a very weird thing for me. So it does happen sometimes.
Yeah.
But most of the time, not. It's usually a great collaboration. But I have had that happen, and it's very strange.
It's like, wow, that was an interesting idea. Not feeling it. How about this? Like,
no.
Wow.
It's, like,
know,
nothing to do with my life.
I've
and I'm
got
like,
one.
Oh,
like,
sure,
my name's going to be on this thing.
Like, I don't know how much my fans want to hear about this, but I mean, we could do it for
sure,
fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Crazy.
And so we've been talking about the first two EPs. You have one more yet to come, right? Yellow?
Yes.
Which you're wearing yellow framed glasses,
yes,
today
I
and
am
everything.
Wearing, I am wearing
it's perfect.
Yellow is actually my favorite color in life right,
yeah,
now. It's been very frustrating to be, like, in Chapter Red and, like, wanting to wear yellow a lot. Because I love the songs on Chapter Red. I
you're
love,
like, I'm
Chapter
ready
Red,
for yellow.
I just, like, I want to be wearing yellow.
Yeah.
I love the color.
It's
and
so happy.
Yellow shirt,
and, like,
too.
I'll wear yellow and, like, post an Instagram picture, and all my fans are like, it's red, like, right now. Like, what are you doing? Like, you need to, like, they'll make fun. They're not actually being mean, but they'll,
oh,
make,
right,
fun of me. They'll tease me, and they'll be like, B, it's Chapter Red right now. You're,
oh, I mean, you were in Chapter
future.
Red when you were making Chapter Red,
yes,
though. Now
exactly.
you're
that's
already in yellow.
Point. I'm like, you guys, I wrote these songs, like, 2, 3, 4, 5 months ago.
Right.
Come on.
That was always funny. Like, you know, when an artist like releases
is
music,
promoting.
It's like the fans kind of forget that the artist has been living with that music for months
well,
or maybe a year.
That's
you know?
Another reason why I wanted to release my music like this, because I actually have not been doing that. I released the songs on Chapter One Blue a few months after I wrote most of them. Like, there were some that I wrote way before, and I just kind of was like, well, these are still relevant to how I feel now, and so I kind of grouped them like that. But the way that I've been releasing my music in chapters has actually not only been for other people, but for me as well, because I don't like that if you sit with your music as an artist, you get bored of it, and then by the time you actually release it, you're not excited about it anymore, because you're like, oh, I've been hearing these songs for 5 months, like, I don't care anymore, you know? And that sucks as an artist. And so I'm actually still, like, now, like, even last week, writing music for Chapter 3 Yellow, which is coming out in a month, you know? Like, I have been writing music pretty much as it's being released, because that's another thing, is, like, I don't like that, you know, most artists will release a 12-song album at once, and you'll be relating to these songs, you know, 8 months after they release it, and by then you know that the artist doesn't relate to that anymore, and so then it feels like you're at more of a distance from the artist than you want to be, because we all like to believe that we're really close to our favorite artists, even though they probably have no idea we exist, and we like to believe that we have this closeness with them, and it's hard to do when you know that they, you know, they've written these songs a very long time ago. So that's another reason why I've been trying to, you know, write things as they come out.
So it's more current, the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking more about this rollout process. We were talking about John Mayer earlier, who did a similar thing with the Search for Everything.
I was so mad he announced that first, because we came up with that concept way before he announced he was going to do it. And I was like, I'm going to be the first one to do this. It's going to be so cool. And then John Mayer announced it first. And we already had our plan in place. And I was like, damn it. Why didn't we announce this before?
Damn that John Mayer.
John Mayer.
And so then when I said it, and I was so excited about it, when I finally was able to talk about it, everyone was like, John Mayer did this. That's so cool that you're going to do it too. I was like, oh, I was so upset.
If it makes you feel any better, Jason Mraz did it like 6 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Well, that makes me feel better, actually.
Yeah, he did,
actually, Robin sort of did it with Body
Talk. Yeah, Robin did it too. Yeah. But everyone's just talking about John Mayer because it was the most recent.
Yeah, totally.
Really high profile. And also because everyone's doing EPs now. Like, it's a very, like, it's a more immediate thing to do, and so...
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, I was just thinking about this rollout method in general, and the other thing that makes sense about it is that your fans will, like, really take in each and every song, as opposed to, you know, you release 2 or 3 singles off a 12-song project. When you have these EPs and 3-song chunks, it's like you're going to listen and enjoy and, like, take in every song from the whole project.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's another thing, is, like, people don't really consume albums anymore. They don't care. People don't care about 12 songs at once. Whenever Drake released, what was the most recent album he had? Whenever
More
Drake
Life.
Released More Alive, and he had, what, like, 20-something songs on there, people were like, well, what do I do with this? I don't have time for all this right now, you know? And that's sad. It is kind of saddening to me, because I listen to albums when they come out from artists that I like, but that's because I'm in music, probably. But, you know, it's hard to get people to... I think we all have really busy lives now, and it's hard to get... And there's a lot of... there's so much stimulation. There's so many artists. There's so much music. There's so much art. There's so much everything in the world. It's hard to get people to focus on 12 songs of yours at once. So that was another thing. I was like, how do I kind of force people to listen to all my music? Because I, you know, obviously when we write our music, we pour our heart and soul into it. I put everything into my music, and I don't want it to not be wasted, because I mean, as long as I've written it, then it's not, but like, I just feel like I want people to actually hear what I have to say.
Right.
And if I have to kind of force them by like being like, hey, 3 songs at a time, so it's way easier for you to listen, but eventually you'll hear my whole album, then that's good too.
It's just a creative way of just delivering music and getting people to listen. It's it's hard, and it's just, people are distracted. But
it makes sense with streaming
sense,
too.
Though.
Yeah. And the full album is coming out in November, is that right? Or is that the plan?
Yes, as of now, that's the plan. We originally were going to release Chapter 3 in August, but I think now it just recently got pushed to early September.
Okay.
So it is possible that Chapter 4 will get pushed till the summer, but probably maybe not, just because music doesn't usually get released between like December and January, because that's like holiday time for everyone.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to make sure it still comes out in November, because that
if
would probably
if it doesn't,
be...
don't get upset.
All right.
We know these release dates can always change.
And so there will be new songs on the full album in addition to all the EP songs,
right?
Yes, there
will be 3 more songs.
Cool.
All right, very cool. And do you have any plans to, like, tour around it, maybe?
Yeah, I'm actually getting on a call today with some people on my team about that, potentially. So I'm not actually sure. I actually genuinely don't know any details about that yet, but we are, I think, trying to put that together, because I just recently did a quick 3-day headlining thing around just a few dates in California. And they went really well, so I think that was probably a good sign for, yes. for everyone else. And I think we're going to try to get me on the road more now. That was kind of like a trial run.
Awesome. Cool. Well, we are super excited for all this new music, and we'll have to talk to you when this full project comes out as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Actually, like before, I was about to just like let you go, but I wanted to ask you one more thing. Do you kind of feel like each individual chapter of these EPs, like, has like a different feel, like are you like purposely trying to have it have a different emotion feeling? Yeah, that's the plan.
I have synesthesia, which is when you see music in color, and that's
wondering about that when the color
That's why I've been using the colors, because whenever we decided that we were going to release the music in chapters rather than all at once, I was thinking, well, how do we take this farther? Like, how do we expand on this and make it more creative? And then I was also trying to figure out how I was going to pick which songs come out when, because I had different attachments to each song for different reasons, and I was like, how am I going to figure out like how they go together? And so I grouped them together by what color I saw when I listened to them.
That's amazing.
You know, because of the colors that I see, usually I see certain colors because the lyrics emit a certain emotion or the music sounds a certain way, and it makes me feel a color. And not coincidentally, I think all the songs that are lyrically similar, I see similar colors for. So I kind of pair them together based on, you know, the things that I wrote when I was experiencing different things. And so chapter one, blues, is what I was experiencing in a time that I was feeling very blue. Mm. And chapter two, red, is more the songs that reflect kind of my life at this point now, where like I've moved on from the sadness, and I was kind of angry about how sad I was for so long. And then I was empowered by that anger to move on. And so those songs all kind of capture a very red feeling for me. And then chapter three, yellow, I'm putting on songs that I see yellow for that kind of emit that exact same emotion. So they are divided up by emotions and by the colors that I see based upon those emotions.
Does chapter four have a color, or is it like a
chapter
rainbow?
Four is the album.
Right.
So it's just three additional songs, and then, you know, putting it together with the other songs we've released over the course of the year. But I, you know, the three colors just so happen to be the primaries.
Right.
I was saying, like, they're primary colors.
Yeah. So I was thinking, you know, in the same sense, and it's not 100%, but I'm thinking I want it to be something like spectrum, just because in the same sense that the three primary colors can make any color in the spectrum, you need to experience emotions like, you know, the sadness, the loneliness from chapter one, and the anger and empowerment in chapter two, and then the happiness and just trying to figure out and learn from your mistakes in chapter three in order to be the best version of yourself that you can be. So I think that all kind of ties together really nicely.
Well, amazing.
Yeah.
On that note, thank you so much for coming in today. We really appreciate
it. Yeah, for sure.
It.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, B.
Thank you so much to B. Miller for coming by, and make sure to look forward to her upcoming Yellow EP, her full-length set, which is possibly coming out before the end of the year, but don't hold us to that, and of course, her performance at the Hot 100 Festival this weekend. Okay, now it is time for the chart stat of the week. 30 years ago this week, Def Leppard's blockbuster album Hysteria debuted on the Billboard 200 chart. The set entered the chart dated August 22nd at number 36 and would eventually hit number 1 nearly a year later on July 23rd, 1988. In total, the set spent 6 weeks atop the list. Amazingly, the album actually spawned an extraordinary 7 hits on the Billboard Hot 100, including an impressive 6 top 20 charting smashes. Among them were the top 10's Hysteria, which hit number 10, Pour Some Sugar on Me, of course, which hit number 2, damn it, it should have gone to number 1.
Should have.
Love Bites, which did hit number 1, and Armageddon It, which hit number 3. In total, Hysteria spent 78 weeks in the top 10 of the Billboard 200 chart, which is the most weeks in the top 10 for an album by a rock band in the chart's history. Further, in 2015, Hysteria was named the number 25 biggest album ever on the Billboard 200 chart. Also, by the way, I love this album. It is such a great album.
I feel bad to admit that I have not heard the whole album.
You just know the hits.
I know Pour Some Sugar on Me.
It was produced by Mutt Lange. I mean, like, most of the songs were written with him. Mm-hmm. It was immaculately produced, and it is just literally full of hit singles. They could have released more singles, and it is just wonderful, and actually the band just reissued the album in a deluxe edition like a week or so ago, so go check that out.
We also had an oral history of,
which is amazing,
of that, is it of that album,
of particular? That album,
you can go to billboard.com and look that up.
It is absolutely so incredibly fascinating. Anyway, so there you have it. 30 years ago this week, Hysteria debuted on the Billboard 200 chart, on its way to number one nearly a year later. Okay, we have reached the end of our show. First, thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you.
Do you normally, this is where we say, if you have any parting words, do you have any parting words?
I have nothing else to say other than I am very glad to have been on this is my Pop Shop podcast debut.
It is. No, you've been on the Must Hear Music podcast before, haven't you?
No, I haven't. The only podcast I was ever on was the Juice podcast back in the day.
Oh, man. How did they never get you on
I know.
The
Listen to how eloquent I am. I'm so primed for this.
You could get your own podcast. You could
we'll
become
talk about it offline.
You could become a regular feature on this show. You
hey.
Never know.
Hey, hey,
careful
hey, we'll
what you wish
it.
For. What song should we go out on? Normally, we go out on a song that plays us out at the end of the show. And it could be something that we've talked about, or just something that you're feeling, or something. It could be anything. Hmm. Could be a Def Leppard track. Hmm. Could be you're thinking about
I'm
this
thinking
too much.
Really hard. Well, I guess one of the Hot 100 performers.
Oh, that makes sense.
One of my favorites is Tinashe, who I love very dearly, and one of her singles that I think should have been a bigger hit is "Company," and I really think that. You'll all enjoy it.
Well, let's go out on that, and we'll see you next time.
Great.
Bye. I'm supposed to be just want some company, company. I just need some company,
company. I just need some company, company. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.